Labor for March 13th, 2013. We have a lot of people here today, and I'm going to run this meeting very, very tight. We're going to have very, very strict timelines, and we have a lot of people that are testifying pretty much saying the same thing. So if you have written testimony, we have it, and we've read it. And so we're going to keep you to a three-minute time line in testifying. So we want to make sure that you have summarized things, or we will not be able to get through with the meeting today. And also, if people are saying the same things over and over and over again, we get it. And so if you can just summarize with other issues, we would appreciate it very much. But we do appreciate you taking the time being here and getting involved. What we're going to do is we're going to open up with the taxi cab bills, and we're going to open them together. And then the last three bills that deal with the wage issues, we're also going to open all together. So unless you have testimony on a different issue, you can only have to get up once. Okay. So we're going to open, even though we don't have everybody here yet this morning, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2529. And Jan, if you could summarize the bill, please.
And a public hearing also.
And a public hearing on 3147. So we're going to open a public hearing on both of those. Jan, if you could summarize the two bills.
Good, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2529 includes in the definition of employment for the purposes of unemployment insurance the services that are performed by a leaseholder in the operation of a motor vehicle that's operated as a taxi or as a non-emergency medical transport. House Bill 3147 for the purposes of excluding service performed in the operation of the taxi and the medical transport vehicles excludes from the definition. It removes the requirement that the service be performed for an entity that's operated by a board of owner-operators who are elected by members of the entity.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Representative Holvey.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2529 will be the bill I'm speaking about this morning. And I introduced this bill as a result of legislation that was passed last session. And there was a piece in the bill that bothered me throughout the session, last session. And it had to do with the taxicab owners being declared owners as a result of having a leasehold interest, which normally wouldn't sound too out of the ordinary, but the definition of leasehold in this particular case under ORS 656027 just referred to a driver who rented the cab for a couple of hours would have a leasehold interest in the cab and then be declared an owner of the company. And it seemed to overreach really the definition and the intent of what I thought was good policy, and after discussions during the interim over this, came back with a change to that bill. Redefining or taking out the leasehold interest as being a piece of defining what ownership means. So that's the bill as drafted, pretty simple, and leave it to the committee for its consideration.
Okay, do you have any questions of Representative Fulvey? Okay, thank you very much. On these two issues, we have three other people signed up, actually on 2529, and then one, the same person on 3147. So, Alana Guinea, Terfuz Alim, and Ed Troik, Ed? And I'm sure when you identify yourselves, you will pronounce your names so I don't butcher them. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I'd like to thank you for hearing these bills together. I think that it creates a much broader discussion than if we took them one at a time. The Oregon AFL-CIO frequently weighs in when your body considers exclusions from the definition of employment, whether it's an all-out carve-out to an independent contractor status or exclusions from employment just for pieces of our economy, pieces of what might be considered an independent contractor. The issue surrounding cab drivers is one that we have weighed in on for a few years, and it became clear to us last legislative session that there are a few different ways of operating a cab company. And while in some scenarios we do absolutely believe that cab drivers are employees of the company they work for, in other scenarios they may well be more closely related to an independent contractor. Last session, because of that conclusion, we remained neutral on a bill that would carve out some cab drivers and create them as independent contractors. And after that bill passed, a few different scenarios were brought to our attention. One is the scenario that Representative Holvey just mentioned, that House Bill 2529 addresses, where you have people who really don't have an ownership interest in the cab company, who may well drive for just a few hours a week and who don't have tools to take with them to another job should they cease working where they are currently working. The other scenario that was brought to our attention is the possibility of creating something similar to a cooperative like was addressed in the last legislative session, but where drivers only had a very small interest. It was kind of a sham cooperative. We support House Bill 2529 that tries to address one of those issues. We know that there are groups looking at amendments that would address the other scenario where somebody may not truly be an independent contractor. And we would oppose House Bill 3147 that creates an exclusion or a carve out for all cab drivers, because we really do believe that when you are working for a company, when you don't have an ownership interest in that company, in your cab, you are an independent contractor. You are not making your own decisions, and you should have the protections that go along with being an employee of a company. I'm happy to answer any questions, and again, thank you for hearing these bills today.
Thank you very much. You, sir.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Trompke. I'm an attorney. I represent Green Transportation Company, one of the cab companies in Portland. Next to me is Tesfaye LeMay, who is the operations manager of Green Transportation Company. We'll try to be brief because of the time constraints today, but the nature of the industry is one that isn't easily susceptible to the wage and hour laws and employee regulation, in that the drivers work the hours that they want to work, at least in Green Transportation Company, and drivers sign contracts with people called spare drivers. That is, I as a person can go sign a contract to become a driver with Green Transportation, work one shift a day, and then I go out and get my own spare drivers. Those people lease the company on a long-term basis, 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day, and may do that for a year or more until they're able to amass enough money to buy their own car or go on to a different company or whatever they want to do, decide they don't like it and leave. But the relationship in the way this company is managed is one that the owner of the car, the driver, really is an independent business. And this bill, 2529, will interfere with that and not allow the drivers to bring on spare drivers. If they don't do that, then they'll work more hours themselves. That'll decrease safety. If they don't have the extra income from having spare drivers on board, they will not be able to take care of their cars, keep safety up. So it'll hurt public service. And Mr. Olemi is all about public service and providing good transportation services to the public, be it at the airport, downtown Portland. He is his company and the other owners of the company own it as a public service in that area. The bill has, is worth talking about. Representative Holvey's concern was short-term leases, well, that pendulum may have swung too far one direction by eliminating all leases, including long-term leases, that would swing it too far the other way. And so the company wants to oppose it. And Mr. Alemi would like to say a few things further. But if you have questions, we can answer them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for... My name is Tasfai Alemi. I'm the managing member of the Green Transportation Company, LLC. Thank you, Madam Chairman, for giving me the chance to say, talk about 2529. Well, the intended purpose of the bill might be good, but it's going to hurt the intended beneficiary of the drivers. The company, in my company, as far as I know, there is one driver owns the vehicle. He or she can have two drivers plus himself, the driver. If the drivers who are going to be the second driver or the third driver, then if this bill becomes a law, what happens is the driver, the owner of the vehicle will say, okay, if I'm going to be forced to make these two drivers employee, then I'm going to just drive myself. That's what he is going to decide. There are a number of things that will happen. The drivers are allowed to work 14 hours per the City of Portland Court. But if they are told to have these drivers to be employee, who we call them spare drivers, what will happen is he will pull all the drivers, those two guys, they will lose the job, the service, which these drivers could have been out there and serving, will be cut off, and then the job that they have will be cut off. So this bill, the intended benefit to the drivers will hurt the drivers themselves. So I oppose this bill. So I'm not in favor of this bill because it hurts the drivers themselves, not the company. If there's anything, I'll answer.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions of the panel? Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. You're talking about spare drivers. So it's basically, they're kind of like subcontractors. You contract with two other people. You'll take, how does that work? Maybe
okay.
Explain a little
okay.
bit more.
Let me explain. It is the main driver, the owner of the vehicle is registered in the driver's name. The driver has a contract with a company. The spare drivers are coming to the company, and they have to be certified by the company that they have gone through all the process of safety, criminal background check, and everything. Then what happened, the company acknowledged that this driver is driving for this person, not for the company. We don't intervene how much he pays to that driver. The only money that we know is the main driver and the company. That's it. So the only thing that we know is the driver that is driving for us that has a main contract will only pay us the amount. If he has two drivers, we don't know how much he's charged. That's another benefit for the driver, and that's another benefit for the public because these guys can be, the car is not going to be parked. It's going to be serving the public. So that's where it becomes important that we have to know what, all the balanced approach is. So the company do not charge the spare driver. The driver, the owner of the vehicle charges the spare driver. That's what happens. The relationship is only we certify that driver, the spare driver who comes here to drive, only is certified by the city, certified by the criminal background check. Everything is done. That's only thing that our company knows. That's what, yeah.
Maybe a follow-up. Are they a written contract, like with there's two spare drivers, you have a car, here's George and Joe, they want to drive for you. You give them a written contract, I'll give you this much per shift or per hour or per a mile. How is it usually broken up?
Okay. The contract, there is a contract between the two drivers, the owner of the vehicle, and the spare driver. And then the company acknowledges that contract between the two. but there is no monetary information. The monetary information is between the spare driver and the owner of the vehicle. Yeah, go ahead.
As the company's attorney, I provided the company with a written form of contract that under which the driver who owns the car has to acknowledge that this is a contract between the driver who owns the car and the spare driver, and then the company acknowledges that the person, they've done the background checks and things that the city requires, which is to say that the person has a cab license, a cab driver's license with the city, they've passed the criminal background check, and that the company has listed the spare driver on the insurance that's required by the city. So in that way, the company fulfills the small number of duties that the company has to do to protect the public that are imposed by the city. Otherwise, the rest of the contract is verbal between the driver and the owner of the vehicle as to the amounts of money and how often it's paid, if it's paid Tuesdays, daily, you know, once a week. All of that is between them, and the company isn't involved in it. It may be in writing, it may not be. But portions of it that are regulatorily required are in writing, yes. Does that answer your question, Representative Thatcher? Thank you.
Other questions, Representative
Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate, how unique the taxi cab industry is. But it sounds like to me you're making a claim that these drivers are independent contractors and therefore shouldn't be subject to unemployment insurance withholdings, which is what House Bill 2529 is about. And so if that's the case, and if you meet the state law requirements of what an independent contractor is, then you don't, this bill is moot. You wouldn't be subject to unemployment insurance under our independent contractor laws. And so why do you need this carve-out from employment law that says we're not subject to unemployment insurance? Because that's really what this bill is about. It's not about whether you're an independent contractor or not. And so if you're an independent contractor by law and meet those statutes, there's no need for this bill.
I'll try to answer this, and then I'll let Mr. Alimi pipe in.
Okay.
Partially correct. We partially agree with you, Representative Holvey. As between the company and the spare driver, that's probably very true. As between the driver, the car owner, and the spare driver, that may not be true. It's hard to know, and each of the drivers then will have to suffer audits and to prove the long independent contractor test. It's a long test. It's subject to judgment, and it's expensive to go have an audit. All of the taxi companies themselves have been audited within the last couple of years, and this would force the drivers to be audited for their practices, their contracts, and all. And so bright line tests at that level are much more helpful because the drivers and the spare drivers it's a cost of hiring attorneys, accountants, and other folks to go in and fight these battles because the agencies come in and they want to see nice paperwork, tidy files and everything else. And if you've ridden in some cabs, not Green's cabs, you'll find that a lot of those files are in the cars. And you know, especially in cities like New York or D.C., they operate out of their cabs. They don't operate out of offices. And so it imposes a burden on the driver, the small business, the independent contractor driver who owns a car that shouldn't be borne, doesn't need to be borne by them. Just a bright line test is a very good thing at that level, and that's what this takes away the way it's written. If it were to say long-term contracts of lease are permitted, and pick a number, it has to be at least a month, has to be 6 months. Green doesn't have a problem with that because most of their people are in it for the long haul. A few come and go, but most of them really are long-term drivers.
Can I add a little bit? Here's the point. There is no problem with the owner.
Sir, you can lean back a little bit.
I'm sorry. There is no problem. Yeah. There is no problem between the company and the owner of the vehicle, because there is a clear understanding that the owner of the vehicle and that the company has a contract. That clearly states that, you know, we may not be subjected to unemployment. That driver is clearly an independent contractor. But what happens is, when this driver, the owner of the vehicle, wants we leave, he wants to give it to somebody else. And then he wants somebody to help him out. In our company, one vehicle can be driven by three drivers. That's what we allow them to do, because they have to get some time, they have to get off, they get sick, and all this can take. But if this bill comes to be a law, the owner of the vehicle will be subjected to reporting or unemployment. That is going to be affecting the driver, the owner of the vehicle who is contracting with us or with a company. That's the side that I didn't, you know, I didn't like. So instead of benefiting the owner of the vehicle or the owner, the drivers who are driving together, it's going to hurt them, because he will say, okay, I don't want anybody to drive for me. I'll drive as much as I can, but I can't have another spare driver, which we are cutting off two drivers by passing this law. Because I have talked to them, and they say, if this bill comes, then my spare driver is going to go away. That's what they say. So the intent might be good, but it's going to hurt the industry. It's going to hurt us. So that's why, because the effect is the company and the company and income is not going to be affected in any way, but the time the owner vehicle, the owner driver will take off, the income the owner driver will get will be affected, and the service of the public will be affected, because those two or one driver is going to be pulled off by the owner of the vehicle.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
It's a little late, but...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We also have Steve Cafori, did not sign up, but he's there, so to testify.
Madam Chair, may I bring Ray Miles up with me, please?
Pardon?
Yeah, bring Ray Miles with
yes.
me.
Okay, and since we have so many people on the next bill, we're combining bills, so it's both of them at the same time. And Mr. Campbell, did you want to? Were you signed up too?
Okay. Madam Chair, member of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafori. I represent Broadway Cab, and I have here with me this morning Ray Miles, who's the president of Broadway Cab. I want to just say a couple of sentences, then I'll let them, the people who know what they're talking about, get into this. We oppose House Bill 2529. We understand the reason behind it and the good intentions behind it. The problem is that the way it's drafted, and perhaps the only way it can be drafted, it's too easy to get around. What could happen very easily is one of these owner-operators that you heard about last testimony, who's leasing out his cars on the weekend, if this law passed, could just sell a portion of his car, 10% interest, for example, to that driver, and then you wouldn't have the situation of a lease situation, so you'd be out of the bill. But what you do is you'd cause a hardship for the driver and that secondary driver, because they would then have to go through the paperwork and the registration and all that to establish a relationship where they both own it. So it makes a hassle for them. It doesn't get anybody who wants this bill passed get it any further. And so what would happen essentially is a bill that's designed to help drivers would end up hurting drivers. So that, for that reason, we oppose 2529. We do support 3147. It's the bill that we introduced. This legislature passed last year a bill for radio cab that we thought was based on a faulty assumption that the ownership structure of the company itself has in any way has anything to do with the relationship between the company and the drivers. It seems to me that the drivers are either independent contractors or their employees, and that's a fact situation which causes a lot of problems, because it's not as clear as you just heard as it should be. But it is not an issue that has anything to do with the relationship of who owns the company, whether it's 5 owners or 10 owners or 15 owners or one owner. That's a separate issue. And to try and say we're going to have one set of rules for a company that has this kind of ownership and another set of rules for another company that has separate ownership, we feel is flatly discriminatory. And that's why we introduced this bill, so that we would have the same laws, level playing field, we're all operating under the same rules.
Good morning. My name is Ray Miles, and I'm the president of Broadway Cab. I'm here in support of House Bill 3147 and in opposition of House Bill 2529. Last year, the Oregon legislature passed a bill that exempted cab drivers in Oregon that drive for an entity that is operated by a board of owner-operators elected by the members of the entity from paying unemployment tax. We believed then and still believe the legislation was inherently unfair. It absolutely gives an advantage to one type of business over another. As Mr. Kafouri said, at the heart of this issue is the nature of being an independent contractor. It is the relationship between the company and the individual that is important, not the structure of the company. Further, the language in the last bill was not clear. Many companies throughout the state have now slightly modified their structure so as to be technically covered under the new exemption. It has become an issue of word games and not policy. So we ask that you support Bill 3147. It will assure the taxi industry can continue to operate as it has for decades. It will provide clarity and consistency so the employment department and taxi cab companies do not have to go through costly court battles every decade or so. To your point, Representative Holvey, Broadway has been subject to the test in the past, and we have passed the test every time. But about every decade, it bubbles to the surface again. We go through this legal battle that costs us hundreds of thousands of dollars. And our one and only source of revenue is to sell our services to cab drivers. So once again, what starts out to be helpful to cab drivers ends up hurting them because their fees go up as a result of these legal battles that we fight. So ours is a niche industry. It's very complicated, and honestly, few people outside the industry truly understand it. We are constantly in competition in our industry. There are sort of what I consider legitimate companies, and then companies that operate under the radar. And, you know, let's face it, anybody can paint their car yellow, put a top light on, and cruise around and get fares when the bars close or in front of hotels. So what happens is the more there's burden placed on the legitimate companies, the more it absolutely makes these illegitimate companies more viable, and they're better able to undercut our pricing, engage in shady practices, and it really does endanger the public. But as I said, it's a complicated industry, and few people outside of it understand it. So I thank you for your time, and I hope you'll support House Bill 3147.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one word just for your information. We did meet with the AFL-CIO, and what I would like is if you would hold their bill in abeyance. You have nothing scheduled, a work session, I see, and give us a chance to sit down. We had a very pleasant, good discussion within their day, and I think there may be some room for working something out, because what we have in front of us now is a bill that attempts to do something. It isn't going to help, and perhaps if there's a problem, we can work it out.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Mr. Campbell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darren Campbell. I'm here representing Radio Cab. Not only do I do their legislative work, but when I'm not here in the building, I am a full-time cab driver, so it gives me a little bit more of a unique outlook on how we operate and what it's like in our industry. I can tell you unequivocally that we operate as independent contractors. Just like Ms. Miles said, we've passed the test, and every decade or so, the rules get changed, and we have to fight to pass the test again. So, more than anything, I want to be here as an information source, but I'm not willing to support House Bill 2529 as it's drafted right now. I do believe that there's some work that we can do on that with the AFL-CIO to try and turn it into something that may work, but as it's written right now, I don't believe it's a good bill.
Thank you. Do you have any questions of the panelists? Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. What keeps surfacing in my mind, and I don't understand your industry, all I can say is I've had a friend that worked for Broadway Cab way back. But beyond that, when I was hearing testimony from the previous panel that a driver can hire some spare drivers and they're really, it could be just a verbal contract as to how they'd be paid, do you think that it would be a good idea, even just within the industry, to make sure that there's some sort of clear contractual relationship between an owner driver and their spare drivers, or however you term it?
Well, so all cab drivers operate under one basic premise, which is they keep all the fares that they collect. So that is their source of revenue. Our source of revenue is to sell them dispatching services and risk management services. Their source of revenue is to provide fares. So I believe in the industry, certainly at Broadway, I believe all those contracts are in writing. All of them are clear. And these second drivers is what we call them. They absolutely can shop around and they find the owner driver that gives them the best deal, offers them the best shift or hours of availability that works for them. So I don't think it's sort of as, at least in most companies, certainly the big companies, it's not as casual, I guess I would say, as it may be at a smaller company.
It kind of clears it up for maybe how you operate, but I guess I can see where some of these bills come from, where they say, well, we need to make you an employee because it looks like maybe people are taking advantage of you. I mean, that's kind of the premise that I think these are offered under. So at your company, maybe they get to keep all the fares, but maybe there's also leasing of the vehicle or some sort of other, charge in there that would need to be, clearly defined as to how much you'd be getting. I don't want to see somebody ending up having to, work 14 hours for somebody as a spare driver and end up, you owe me everything you got just to drive our vehicle around. That's what I just want to make sure. There's not.
And truly, this notion that the driver keeps all the fares, it's not unique to our company. It's not unique to Portland or the state. It is like this across the United States. This is the way the cab industry is built. The only major city in the United States that has employee drivers is Las Vegas, and they're kind of a unique beast unto themselves. It's all hails for the most part, and it's all tourists. It's, there's not that much. Portland isn't, and no other city in Oregon, frankly, isn't like that. We aren't tourist dependent, we're resident dependent. We're part of the community.
Madam Chair, if I could, Representative Thatcher, there's literally hundreds of ways a company can operate, and I have no doubt in my mind that there's people getting taken advantage of out there on the street. Mm-hmm. At Radio Cab, and I believe at Broadway Cab, we don't allow the owners of our cars to go into lease agreements on their own. We make sure that's regulated inside the company, and I believe that the city of Portland makes sure that happens as well, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there might be a little bit of a communication error with Green Cab's testimony, but the way it works at Radio Cab is we have 150 owner operators, and we own the company itself, so we don't have one owner that has a bunch of people that own their cars. We actually own the company. The leasing portion of our company is they lease the cabs through the company itself, and the owner of the vehicle is outside of that. So the owner of the company actually gets the lease money, but they have zero relationship with the lease driver. There's no FaceTime there. There's no side agreements. It's one agreement that applies to all lease drivers equally in the same way. And that's vehicle, dispatch service, risk management, and credit card services, and that's what that lease amount gets to you.
And one more question, and that is clearly spelled out somewhere between the two parties.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? Okay. That's all I'm getting.
Thank you. Any other questions of the panel? Representative Holvey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just a comment. You know, Mr. Kafouri's statement, I believe, was accurate. And a reason I opposed the bill from last session was the type of business entity formation or structure of the ownership should have no bearing on whether or not unemployment insurance is required for employees. I voted against that bill for that reason and some other reasons as well. The issue at heart here is our taxi cab drivers independent contractors. Oregon went through in 2001, 2003, and 2005 with extensive stakeholders with a Republican House and a Democratic Senate and establish independent contractor laws, which are the point of this whole discussion. If, in fact, your companies are independent contractors and operate with people that are independent contractors and you contract with them under the law in Oregon, which is very precise and very well there is a bright line there. There's a 5-point test. It's not really too complicated. If you meet 3 of those 5 criteria, you qualify as an independent contractor. That implies to all industries across the state of Oregon, with very few exceptions. There are a couple, but not very many. And so every industry that comes along and decides, well, we want exempt from the independent contractor laws, we just want to carve out our employees based on this fact or that fact, I think is really going around the independent contractor laws that we have on the books to basically bring some clarity to this subject matter. So I am opposed to this notion that we should just carve out industries based on their definition or based on their business model when we have criteria in statute. I think it's ORS 670 or 690 or something like that. That basically defines this. And if you're not an independent contractor, then you're an employee, and your employee should have the benefit of unemployment insurance and workers' comp. And so I submit to you the -2 amendments to House Bill 2529 to solve Mr. Kafouri's problem of treating companies equally and doing away with this carve-out that was passed last session and going back to the independent contractor test. And if you've both said that you've passed that test previously, and so you're not subject to unemployment insurance or workers' comp if in fact you're an independent contractor. So I just leave it at that, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Fulvey, I appreciate your comments, and I think that in a lot of ways I wish I could agree with you more fully than I do. I think you're seeing the situation the way it should be. Unfortunately, we have a problem with the administrative agencies, and I think that's the genesis of this whole problem. If our administrative agencies would say, yes, Broadway Cab, we've looked at yours, and you're an independent contractor relationship with your drivers, and then say, fine, now we'll go after the construction industry, or now we'll go after the fishing industry. But that's not what's happening, unfortunately. We're having to do this again and again, take it back to court, after we've already made our case that we are. And what you and I, if you recall, Representative Holby, representing the construction industry, I've been involved in those discussions for years on trying to make this a bright line of state statute. I think we've done it. And if we could get our administrative agencies to go along with what you and legislature have done, we wouldn't be here sitting in front of you today.
Okay. Just a comment, Madam Chair. I think that's...
Quick comment, please.
I mean, that's the process of our judicial branch in administrative law. They're the ones that interpret and make these decisions, and we can't really tell them what to do. I think they do a pretty good job, and our administrative law judges do a pretty good job of going through this without, a process that is too cumbersome.
Okay. So. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have no one else signed up on these two bills. Anyone want to speak on those two? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearings on House Bill 2529 and House Bill 3147. And I open up a public hearing on House Bills 2976, 2977, and 3142. What we're going to do is have, we've got different panels that are coming up, and as I say, most of the people that have signed up on all three bills. So if you'll just identify which bill, if it's other than the three that we're talking about, if it's just a specific one, please let us know. And we, since we have so many people signed up, we are going to give you a time limit, and it's 3 minutes, and I'm going to very nicely, when your 3 minutes is up, say thank you. And that means your 3 minutes is up. We were going to have a buzzer, but I thought that might be a little nice. Thank you. So if we can do that. So that's what we're going to do. So the first panel we're going to bring up are Lee Mercer, Karen Nettles, and Michael Dale. And before you give your presentation, make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Chair Doherty and the members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Mercer with Main Street Alliance of Oregon. We're a statewide small business organization with about 1,200 small businesses around the state. We're kind of Main Street mom-and-pop businesses. As a Main Street Alliance, we're small businesses ranging from realtors to retailers and from financial consultants to family farmers. We oppose wage theft in general and like the idea, we're in support of 2976, 2977, and 3142, because generally we're in support of ending wage theft. It creates an uneven playing field for the small businesses we represent who pay often living wages and provide benefits or try to, and we have to compete with those that do not. Main Street Alliance of Oregon opposes wage theft because it also harms our communities. Wage theft denies income and commerce to the communities when people don't get paid. As a side note, we have some of our members are construction contractors, and they're particularly outspoken on this because often if they're the high road contractors, they're kind of undercut by the low road contractors. A statement by a couple of the contractors on our roster as contractors with a reputation to uphold in our communities and who believe in doing the right thing by our employees, we oppose wage theft. The construction industry has some bad actors. According to Boley data, our industry has the highest percentage of wage claims compared to its size in recent years. In our industry, employers who pay good wages and provide benefits are unfairly underbid by firms that do not. This is a general statement from our coalition. On a personal note, I worked between my years as a small business owner and my years in nonprofit now. I worked for 3 years as a manager of a temp labor agency, and I think one of the bills here is focused on that industry. And I wanted to say I really respect, if there are managers of temp labor agencies in the room, I really respect the work they do, because I did that for 3 years, and I was there at 5 in the morning when 60 homeless people would be lined up to try to get jobs, and they wait till 11 in the morning to see if they got out, and if they didn't get out, maybe they went on to the soup kitchen. And we got them out on jobs, doing jobs like ditch digging, hanging sheetrock, doing tear-offs on roofs, moving furniture, some of the hardest work we have. And they got the dignity of a day's work after years of not working. So this was the good side of the job. The other side was there was quite a markup in this industry. We were charging $17.95, $18.95 an hour and paying people $6.25, $7.25 an hour. And with that markup, the company I was with grew from one branch in Washington State to $1 billion in sales in 10 years, which that's the American way, so the money was made. But there's quite a markup there. So what I'd really encourage the committee to think about a thoughtful way of addressing regulating this industry, that the people that worked for me would get a gross check of $50 and their taxes would be taken off, and maybe they have a wage garnish and they'd take home $20 or $25 a day and go back to the camp on the creek and come back at 5 in the morning to go to work. So if there's anything you can do to kind of regulate things so that those folks that do that work get a fair break, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And before the next speaker, we are going to have Jan summarize what the three bills are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, committee members, very quickly, House Bill 2977 basically brings construction labor contractors under the same statutes as the farm labor contractors. House Bill 2977 regulates the entity that is an employment agency and sets out regulations for them, and 3142 modifies employment-related terms in the statutes relating to wages, hours, employment conditions, farm labor contractors, and construction contractors.
Thank you.
My name is Karen Nettler, not Nettles. It was probably the way I printed it. And I'm speaking in favor of these three bills. So Chair Doherty and Vice Chair Kennemer, Vice Chair Barton, thank you for this opportunity. I'm a resident of Portland, and I'm speaking on behalf of Oregon Center for Christian Voices, or OCCV. We're a nonprofit that seeks to activate people of faith on issues of economic and social justice. And so I speak unabashedly from that point of view. We believe that Scripture is clear about God's intended role for government, and that is to assure the poor and marginalized in our community are cared for and that all have the opportunity to flourish. So for this reason, OCCV joined with other groups to advocate for laws that address the issues of wage theft. We joined with over 100 other leaders and members of Oregon faith communities in signing an interfaith letter urging Oregon lawmakers to address wage theft during this session, and that is attached to my testimony. Scripture says, "You shall not withhold the wages of poor and needy laborers. You shall pay them their wages daily before sunset, because they are poor and their livelihood depends on them." We believe the three bills before this committee are consistent with that scriptural mandate as they address fair and fundamental rights for employees, including the right to know the conditions of the work they have been hired to perform, assurance that they will be paid for the work performed, and a means for legal redress when these rights are violated. And further, we see these laws as entirely consistent with the responsibility we have as citizens and government to not turn aside the needy from justice or to rob the poor of their right. Again, Scripture. And finally, OCC believes that when we care for the poor and marginalized, we are acting on behalf of all of us, helping to create a community where all can flourish as God intends. So we ask that you support these bills to establish these basic rights for employees in need of the protection of these common sense laws. So thank you for this opportunity to speak to you, and thank you for the good work you do.
And thank you. Thank you for your brevity, sir.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dale. I'm with the Northwest Workers' Justice Project, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Coalition to Stop Wage Theft. I've filed written testimony, so I won't go through the details of the bills, but of course, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond to them. I thought that maybe the best way to use the limited time available is to talk about why we're proposing these bills. Frequently, in talking to people in the building, we're told or we're asked, this is already illegal, right? Yes, it's illegal. Then why do we need laws? Don't we just need enforcement? And we believe there are some structural things that cause this and allow it to occur, encourage it to occur, and we are trying to address those structural things so that we can have a better handle on wage theft. What are those factors? One of those factors is the increasing use of contingent labor. Now, we're not against contingent labor. It's perfectly legal to, and by contingent labor, we're talking about people that don't have a regular job. They're working, but they're working short-term. They're working for a temp agency. They're working on the side of the road. They're not regularly attached to the workforce. We're not opposed to that kind of work. In fact, it's a life line for many of our clients. However, with that vulnerability comes an opportunity to take advantage. And some people are great employers, and we don't see those. Who we see are the people that don't pay, that use the holes in the law to be able to manipulate in order to take advantage. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that you can get a judgment, but that doesn't do you any good if you can't collect the judgment. And tied to the problem with contingent labor often is that what happens is that things are structured in a way so that the only one that has clear responsibility as an employer for wages is someone who is long gone or who doesn't have resources to be able to respond to their responsibilities. So we're trying to get at that. And then the third piece is that people often don't have enough information to be able to enforce their rights. They may not know what they're entitled to because there's been inadequate discussion about what was going to be promised. They may not know where to seek help. They may often not know who their employer is. I've had many instances where, you know, the employer was Jim, he's got a red truck, or it's El Brujo, the wizard, a nickname that people have given folks, and so there are problems with tracking down who the responsible parties are. These bills are part...
Thank you very much. Your 3 minutes is up.
Okay.
You can summarize in one sentence?
I would just simply say that we have engaged extensively in negotiations with the Staffing Association about the bill on the temporary labor. The bill as presented is the bill that we started with. We were hopeful to be able to come to the committee with a compromise bill. That has not been possible. We have, however, been negotiating ever since the last full session, and we have heard some of the opposition, and we will be coming back to the committee with amendments in any event that address many of those concerns.
Thank you. Okay, any questions for the panelists? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I think it's awful that somebody would steal. I'm just trying to get at how would, we've kind of all heard the old tale about, you know, somebody getting yelled at work, going home and yelling at their, you know, their spouse, and then they yell at the kids, and then he kicks the dog or whatever. Well, I feel like we're kicking the dog here. In other words, we're kind of punishing the people that, I mean, the people that didn't do anything. And I'm wondering, I'm just trying to get at how, if these bills were, or let's just say this is current law, how would it change what's going on out there? How would regulating an entity as an employment agency or requiring construction contractors be licensed, all these other things, how would it change what's happening now? Because I know that there was testimony having to do with farm laborers where they said there's still abuses going on. So I'm not sure, other than expanding you know, a bureaucracy, that it would really get at the problem you're trying to solve.
If I may, Chair Doherty, Representative Thatcher, we believe that good employers ought to have clear running ground and a minimal of regulation. We also believe, though, that there ought to be minimums that exclude people who can't do business right. And what we found in the farm labor area is it's not perfect. It's not, I'm not going to say that there aren't sometimes abuses, but there are powerful remedies and there are powerful reasons for someone who, for example, is a farmer, not to use someone who is not licensed or not bonded, because if they do, they can incur liability under the Contractor Registration Act. And so what that does is it eliminates many of those actors from competition. And then for those who are licensed, there is a bond. You have to take a test to show that you know what your responsibilities are as an employer, and you can lose that license if you don't fly right and respond appropriately. Part of the amendments that we will be addressing is to try to figure out ways to make it less burdensome for people who have a good record. Our idea is not here to burden business. The idea is to lift the standard against which people who are good businesses have to compete, and we will be addressing that. We also, I think, need an amendment to address an issue that you raised about very, very casual labor like babysitters, I think there needs to be a de minimis amendment, and we will be proposing that.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. The next panel we have, Paul Shevchenko, Chuck Stahl, and Dirk Moeller. Okay, thank you.
Can I go first? Okay. Good morning, Representative Doherty. I'm sorry. Good morning, Chair People, Representatives, I'm sorry. My name is Chuck Stahl, and I'm here today as opposed to the previous bills that they were talking about. Myself included, I moved to Oregon from Southern California. Before I made my move, I came up here or had reached out to some staffing agencies in the area about making a move up here because I had no employment before my move. Back in July, I had contacted a few companies. They reached out, did some research for me, and I was able to be placed with a staffing company here in the Portland area. And now, after 7 months of being with the staffing agency that I was with, I am now a full-time permanent employee with the company that I was been with for the last 7 months. So I think that the wage step thing, I'm not really, I guess I'm kind of confused on the wage step because I knew where I was going every morning when I woke up. I knew I got paid every Friday. So I'm kind of curious as to what the previous bill or the gentleman was talking about as far as that, because I knew where I was going, I knew who was paying me, and I knew where to get my paycheck. So again, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for your brevities.
Thank you, Chairwoman and committee members, to allow me to talk about the House Bill 2976. Bear with me. I'm sore throat here. My name is Paul Shevchenko, and I'm the district sales manager for LaborEady in Oregon. LaborEady is a true blue company. Last year, true blue companies, including CLP and LaborEady, put more than 7,000 people to work in Oregon and served more than 3,000 businesses in the state. A lot of these businesses are small and medium-sized companies that rely on flexibility of temporary labor to complete special projects and adjust to seasonal and cyclical labor needs. This translates more than $12 million that we've contributed to the economy of Oregon through wages paid to our temporary employees. True Blue takes great pride in the fact that we put so many people to work and act as a bridge to permanent employment. In doing so, we offer flexibility to our employees as well as customers, many of them small and mid-sized businesses that need to respond quickly to production and market fluctuations and that rely on flexible labor to survive this recession. Unlike fly-by-night labor providers and contractors who pick people up on the street corner, True Blue companies strive to protect our employees from unsafe working conditions and comply with employment regulations. We do not pick up people from the street. Our employees come back to our branches, complete applications and screening, including E-Verify, and are dispatched to jobs that match skills and experience. In turn, we ensure that we are paid according to state and federal laws, providing workers compensation in case they are hurt, and work to find them jobs. The abuses the sponsors of this legislation say that they are trying to prevent are not committed by legitimate staffing firms. However, they are committed to by the people who pick individuals up on the streets or parking lots. Should this bill pass, more people will turn to the underground economy rather than staying in the legal labor market. This House Bill 2976 would make it nearly impossible for me to offer temporary staffing services in Oregon. Mandating temporary staffing companies pay temporary employee wages equal to those paid to clients, permanent employees plus a 30% surcharge would make using temporary staffing too expensive for most businesses. It would particularly affect small and medium-sized companies who would rely on staffing companies to complete jobs, special projects, and positions themselves for growth. The sole proprietor or small business that gets hired to do a project that will need to 6 to 10 people for help will either turn down that job or go to a hardware parking lot to find workers. Nobody benefits when that happens. The abuse that this bill aims to solve are not committed by legitimate staffing companies. We must already comply with a long list of state and federal laws related to wage and hour protections, workplace safety, workers' compensation, and employment verifications. The abuses are, however, committed by those unscrupulous individuals who pick people up in the parking lots and street corners. Unfortunately, this bill will do nothing to change that. Instead, focus on enforcing the current laws designed to prevent these things from happening. Furthermore, requiring staffing firms to provide written notice to temporary employees would a severe administration burden on an already challenging process. We already provide this information verbally when we assign our temporary employees. When a branch is dispatching a...
Thank you very much, if you could wrap up.
Okay. This bill is unnecessary. We will make working with legitimate staffing companies unreasonable, expensive, difficult, thus forcing people and business to work at the underground economy. That means more people working without protection, legitimate businesses provide them, more individuals getting hurt, and no workers' compensation, no recourse, and more of what this bill purports to prevent.
Thank you very much. Okay, next, sir.
My name is Dirk Moeller. I'm with Business Connections. We are not a staffing agency. We're a 24-hour call center here located here in downtown Salem. We've been operating since 1949 on a continuous 24-hour basis. Excuse me. We employ 30 employees, and I believe the problem with this bill of 2976 is that there's not enough youth working, and it's going to make that even more difficult for a high school or a college student to obtain a job. Staffing agencies are great opportunities for youth to get a temporary job during summer or, you know, during the school year. I currently employ 6 college students out of my 30 and 7 high school students, and I don't see that this bill is going to improve the economic opportunities for high school and college students. And quite frankly, there's numerous high school and college students that go and graduate from college and they don't even have it. They've never worked a real job in their life, and they're just missing out on great economic opportunities and just learn what the real world's like. And it's going to be harmful to them. So sorry for my briefness here, but this is a bad bill for youth, and we need more youth working to help our society.
Thank you. I like your briefness. Thank you very much. You made your point. Are there any questions of this panel? Thank you very much for coming this morning. Okay, the next panel we have Ramon Ramirez, Janet Bauer, and Julie Uriser. Then actually the people after that, you see a pattern here, we're going for and against, for and against. The next panel that's going to be up is Marlinda Neumeyer, Devin Bentz, and Rick Day after this one.
Good morning, Chair Doherty. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. I apologize.
Here. You want us to get you some water? Hmm? We'll get you some water.
Good morning. My name is Janet Bauer. I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We analyze tax, budget, and economic data with the goal of advancing public policies that create economic opportunity for all Oregonians. Thank you. I'm here to testify in support of the three bills we're here to discuss. Unfortunately, wage theft is a widespread problem in Oregon. The data bears this out. Our organization has analyzed data of wage claims filed with the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. Our analysis covers a 6-year period ending in June 2012. I qualify my description of our findings by stating that the BOLI data is certain to represent the tip of the iceberg of the problem of wage theft in Oregon. It's limited by its complaint-driven nature. Many victims of wage theft do not file a claim for fear of reprisal from an employer, or because the worker doesn't know that that BOLI may be able to help, or because they perceive no hope of recovering unpaid wages. With that caveat in mind, our analysis of the BOLI data found a pervasive problem of wage theft in Oregon. Oregon workers from every industry sector filed a total of 9,878 wage claims worth $28.2 million during the 6-year period we looked at. While all industries were implicated, some were particularly troubling. We found the greatest problems were in the construction industry and the accommodation and food services industry, which includes hotels and restaurants. Focusing on construction for a moment, that industry had particularly high number of claims against it relative to its workforce size. For instance, in the most recent 12-month period we examined, we found the construction industry, while it was made up 4% of Oregon's workforce, had 18% of all claims filed with the Bureau. My assessment that the filed claims represent the tip of the iceberg is backed by research. A survey of workers in a number of low-wage industries conducted in three major U.S. cities in 2009 found, among other things, that more than two-thirds of the workers in the study reported experiencing wage theft in the previous week. Illegal denial of wages is a serious problem in Oregon, one that affects the stability of Oregon workers and their families, local communities, and law-abiding Oregon businesses. And I thank you for your time and urge you to support the bills.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farmworker Union, PECUN, and I'm here in support of the three bills, 2976, 2977, and 3142. But I want to concentrate my testimony. I have written testimony for the committee, but I want to focus on 2977 and 3142. More and more farm workers are now being recruited to work in the construction industry, the painting industry, and landscaping, and also apartment cleaning. And what we have found over the last several years is massive wage fraud. It's gotten so bad that we're the farm worker union, but our service center, which helps workers with wage claims and other worker-related issues, have been overwhelmed in working with non-farm workers collecting wages that weren't paid. I brought a worker that's a victim of wage fraud, and I'll have him testify, but I just wanted to raise this issue through, in your packet that's being passed out is an actual order of determination mm-hmm. against a labor contractor that isn't licensed. To our best recollection, on this wage claim, he's not paid wages for about, with this group of about $29,000. These workers, eight workers, worked for 2 months without getting paid. 2 months without getting paid. Then we try to locate the contractor, and it took us several months just to pinpoint like where these workers worked for, and they worked for different individuals. They worked for different companies, and we actually found business cards from this this employer that claimed that he had a CCB license. And then we contacted that company, and they claimed that this person doesn't work there. When we finally pinpointed an employer that these workers did work for, they basically said, you know, we don't care, you do what you want. If you want to file a lawsuit against us, go ahead. And so this issue is a really huge issue. It's something that's, in my opinion, I don't see the difference between robbing a bank and robbing workers. In this particular labor contractor that we were, that we get this order, you'll see, he has ripped off workers in the tune of $80,000. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Good wrap up.
Yeah. So we're in support of the three bills, of the three measures, and we encourage the committee to approve it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I
want
to invite Jesus to tell his story.
Thank you.
Buenos días, Chair Representante Margaret Doherty, miembros del comité. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Jesus Madrigal.
Estoy aquí para apoyar fuertemente con un sí la proposición de ley HB 2977. Para nosotros es muy importante que los subcontratistas que se dedican a traer trabajadores en construcción sean regulados, y es importante porque hay muchos que contratistas operan bajo mentiras y se dedican a explotar al trabajador.
I am here to strongly support the law proposed in 2977 and all three House bills. The regulation of subcontractors who bring workers to construction sites is very important to us. This is important because there are too many contractors who operate with lies and spend their time exploiting the worker.
En mi caso, trabajé 2 meses, yo y otros 3 trabajadores más. Y el mismo contratista nos robó 2 meses de trabajo. Él nos prometió que nos pagaría mensualmente. Después del mes, nos traía con mentiras de que nos pagarían en 2 días, después en una semana, y así pasaron 2 meses.
In my case, and 3 of my coworkers and I our wages were stolen from the same contractor. We worked for him for 2 months. We painted houses. He promised us he would pay monthly, but after the first month went by, he strung us along with different lies. He would tell us that he would pay us in 2 days, 1 week, and he hasn't paid us yet. And 2 months went by without pay.
En mi desesperación empecé a investigar quiénes eran las compañías y contratistas que contrataban al contratista que me contrató a mí, y les pregunté que si era verdad que si no le habían pagado a él aún. Me contestaron que le estaban pagando cada 15 días a él. Después de eso yo lo enfrenté a él y él simplemente me dijo que no tenía dinero para pagarme. Entonces yo le dije que lo demandaría. Él simplemente me dijo, haz lo que quieras, a mí las leyes no me hacen nada.
In my desperation, I looked for the company and contractors he worked for. I asked them if it was true that he hadn't paid yet. They told me that they pay every 2 weeks. When I confronted the contractor about this, he said he didn't have any money. I told him that I would do a legal lawsuit against him, and he responded, do what you want. The laws don't do anything to me anyway.
En mi desesperación empecé a buscar ayuda. El problema que tuvimos que este contratista no estaba registrado en ninguna división de corporaciones o en mesa de contratistas de construcción. Después de meter mi caso con Boli, pasó un año y yo no recibí.
Ramirez, we need to wrap it up, please.
Okay. So I asked for help and I investigated and couldn't find him. He wasn't registered anywhere.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony, Jesus.
Thank you.
Any questions of the panelists? Representative Thatcher.
Well, I just had a question. Sorry, you. The Oregon Center for Public Policy.
Yes.
About the BOLI data. Where did you get this BOLI data? Is this just like the most recent reports from BOLI having to do with the wage claims and then the amounts? And are they from the temp agencies that are here, or are they just from unscrupulous individuals out there?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, the data that I'm referring to regards wage claims filed by Oregon workers. We requested data for several periods from the Bureau, and they basically provided us over a period of time the data that they had regarding the claims. And it included basically information about who the claim was against and the amounts and some additional information.
Okay. Is that
right? Well, I guess who the claim was against. Was it against, I guess, disproportionately against the temp agencies?
We did not find a disproportionate set of claims against temp agencies. We found claims in all industries, and as I mentioned, construction and the restaurant and food service and accommodation industries were some of the areas where claims were the highest as a share of their workforce.
Okay, other questions? Representative Holvey, quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, I'm just curious, Mr. Ramirez, when you're finding these situations where people aren't getting paid, and of course there's no benefits being paid in on them either as employees, are you running into this in the field with the staffing companies that are registered and licensed, or is this basically a phenomena of people that are operating without licenses that you're mostly seeing in the marketplace?
Chair Doherty and Representative Hobie, most of the problems that we found are with these labor contractors. We've heard of.
Are they licensed or are they temp? They're not temp agencies. They're just unlicensed contractors, essentially.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
But we've also run into some problems with some of the temp agencies. The problem that we run into with the temp agencies is that the information that they're providing in terms of the conditions of the employment are not totally spelled out. And I just got to say that we have a huge population of temporary workers who speak an indigenous language and that are monolingual in that particular language. Just in the city of Woodburn, we have 16 different indigenous languages. So a lot of the information isn't being translated, so these workers are not getting, not understanding what their rights and what the regulations are when they get dispatched. So we're seeing that problem also.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Any other questions? Quickly, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ramirez, could you tell us how House Bill 3142 that changes definitions would help the situation that your panel has described here this morning?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Witt, I think what it does is it by requiring, you know, the same definition. I think the farm labor laws that we have in the books is really helpful. It's really kind of like a model. I'm not saying that it's that farm labor is exempt from the issues. In fact, you'll see that in my testimony, I included a minimum wage study we did several years ago, where there's been a number of abuses going on in terms of labor contractors and growers not paying minimum wage. But so by having that same definition is really important, and by requiring people in outside the farm labor, like in the construction industry and other industry, to register, it makes us really, it helps us pinpoint exactly who the employer is. In farm labor, we can go to a particular, we can take a worker, say, and this is a farm or this is a field that I work in, and it makes it a lot easier for us. But in this situation where we don't know who's who, we don't even know who the employer is, it makes it much difficult. So if you're an employer, labor contractor, you should be licensed and bonded. I mean, the fact that this labor contractor
could you conclude, please?
You know, he's ripping off the community, the worker, and the state by not paying revenues or taxes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we have five more panels to go. So
as they're changing, maybe I can make a comment.
Yes. Okay. Okay. The next panels: Marlinda Niemeyer, Devin Bentz, and Rick Day. Thank you, panel, very much. Representative Thatcher.
It seems like they're targeting people who are vulnerable and don't want to, you know, really report things. And I don't see still how making people register or be legal, if they don't want to be legal and want to operate under the rate, there's going to be bad actors out there. Maybe more education amongst them publishing, you know, outing some of these people would be a little more helpful at least. But, I just don't see how it's going to help.
So. Good suggestion. Excellent. Okay.
Good morning, Chair and representatives. My name is Rick Day. I'm the President and General Manager of Advantage Precast, Inc., a manufacturer locally. Unlike a lot of the people behind me, I'm not a staffing professional, but I rely on those staffing professionals. My comments are fairly general, and I'm in opposition to the bills. These folks behind me have exceptionally high standards. I would say in the past, as a startup company, their standards were higher than mine was in regards to wanting to make sure that my safety program and my training and my screening was there. So they provide me all those services. I've learned from them over the years. They act in essence like an HR department for small business. I have many permanent employees that started out as temporary employees with these staffing agencies. I want to touch on really quick the money issue. I'm not a professional or staffing person, as I've said, but what I see through the industry, to the best of my knowledge, is they're charging as a group approximately 50% over my base wage. If I put back in workers' compensation, which is heavy, as we know, in the construction-related industry, and we make precast concrete, so we're with the construction folks, is that takes at least 30-35% of that. That means these folks are operating on a 15-20% margin. And these are just rough assessments on my part. So there isn't a great amount of greed going on. These people are highly professional. One other thing I'd want to add really quickly that came up earlier is I don't want to see any additional bureaucracy. I think we've got a system in place that works well, and we've got a lot of good professionals in here. Brad Avakian and his staff at Foley, they go after people. If somebody reports it, they're going to go after them. They don't sit on their hands over there. So if there's violations, there's a mechanism already in place to take care of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Next.
Hi. Thank you for Chairwoman and committee members for allowing me to talk to you about HB 2977 relating to labor contractors. My name is Marlinda Neumeyer, and I'm the market manager for CLP Resources in Portland. CLP, like Labor Ready, is a true blue company. We specialize in placing skilled tradespeople in temporary positions in the construction industry. My employees go through a complete application process, including testing, to ensure they have the right skills and experience for the jobs that we send them to. My employees work at CLP because they know I have a job for them when they want work, and many of them love the flexibility that temporary staffing offers. If you're a carpenter who does carpet cabinetry, you may be constantly looking for your next job before your current job is over. And so in essence, you have two jobs. One is to build your cabinets and get them installed and be looking for a new one. When you work for me, I look for your new job while you're focusing on the one that you have currently. HB 2977 is unnecessary and detrimental. This bill would require companies like mine that send employees to work on construction sites to follow all the rules that apply to farm labor contractors. Farming and construction are nothing alike. These two industries have different customs and practices and completely different work sites. The rules developed for agricultural laborers were designed over years for specific conditions related to farm work, where workers often live on the farm and come to work from other countries. One of the provisions of this bill requires a labor contractor to furnish a worker at no charge lodging and adequate supply of food if they are offered an assignment at a job that starts a few hours or a few days after we tell them about it. Section 16.2A of the bill relates to complying with field sanitation regulations. Not only are these requirements impractical, they are inapplicable to our industry. My employees do not live on construction sites. They go to work, they do their job, and they go home. The bill would require staffing companies to provide employees written detailed information for each assignment. My employees don't come to my office every time we send them to assignment. This measure would require them to come to the branch each time they change jobs so I could give them a piece of paper that tells them the same thing I tell them over the phone. Furthermore, companies that have large volumes of daily assignments like my peers at Labor Ready, the administrative burden of that would be unfeasible. It seems like the goal of HB 2977 is to harm staffing firms servicing the construction industry, thus hurting workers and businesses alike.
If you could conclude, please.
Sure. If these rules may be fine for farm labor contractor, but construction is not farming and the rules have no relations to temporary staffing, there are existing laws that protect workers. Let's focus on enforcing those. And I'm going to ask you to please vote no on 2977.
Thank you very much. Next.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of a worker who came up through the ranks.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to you on behalf of CLP and the other agencies around Oregon.
And if you could identify yourself, please.
Oh, I'm Devin Benz.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to you on behalf of CLP and the other agencies around Oregon that provide stability and a peace of mind to their employees day after day, week after week. I represent the thousands of men and women that have benefited from these agencies, and I'm very grateful for the continuous work they not only provide for me and my family, but that they themselves put forth to better me as an individual. Getting out of the Marine Corps in 2007 was no easy task. I thought I was able to conquer much after being deployed overseas, but I didn't realize just how difficult it was to enter back into the civilian workforce and make ends meet. I visualized leaving the Marine Corps as a relief, a new life. I could finally get married, start on my education. I did not realize, though, just how hard it was to find a job. After searching for a few months, I came across CLP. They immediately wanted an interview. They started training me and running me through the proper safety topics in relation to the jobs I would be working on. And within 2 days of meeting them, I was working. The sense of pride that I had to be working again gave me a peace of mind and security. In today's tough economic times, I'm fortunate enough to have security and have a job because of CLP and the other similar agencies. I am now the assistant production manager at a very reputable contractor that works throughout all of Oregon State. 75% of our production workforce was supplied through CLP and other staffing agencies. Our company has expanded greatly with the workers that CLP has provided us. Thanks to them, I was able to go through school, get married, and am set to graduate this summer with a degree in aviation and a commercial pilot's license to operate helicopters. None of this would be possible if it wasn't for the team at CLP and the other agencies around Oregon that properly train their employees and provide them with numerous work opportunities. They gave me the necessary skills and tools to succeed in today's economy. Without them and their fantastic team, I would not be where I am today. I speak on behalf of all the great men and women that successfully mentor, train, and provide to many employers throughout the state when I say how thankful I am for the work they accomplish day in and day out. They are a necessary entity to today's workforce, and if they were not available, myself and the other employees they have would not be as successful as we are today. So I ask you to oppose Bill 2977.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative
One last one. You've heard about the problems. You've heard about people being taken advantage of. What would you suggest would be helpful?
Representative Thatcher, I'd suggest that BOLI is already in place and very effective, as I stated earlier. Perhaps what we do is we tell workers more, and maybe we throw some new posters in the workplace or get the word out more of what BOLI does. If you got a problem, go to BOLI and let them know, because we have the mechanism in place. And what was brought up earlier, some people aren't aware of it. Maybe we let people know more about BOLI.
Thank you. Follow up? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming and testifying. Okay, the next panel we have is Alfredo Sayago, Amadio Rodriguez, and Luis Rosales. And then the panel after that is J.L. Wilson, Bob Russell, and Jan Meekum. Thank you very much for coming today.
Madam Chair, my name is Lindsay Jonas, and I'm going to be interpretation support.
Okay. So you're taking place of the other person. Thank you.
Estimados miembros del comité, mi nombre es Alfredo Sayago, y vivo en el...
So, respected members of the committee, my name is Alfredo Sayago.
Y vivo en el condado de Washington.
I live in Washington County.
Estoy aquí para compartir una experiencia que tuve al trabajar sin recibir mi pago.
So, I'm here to share with you an experience that I had of working without receiving my pay.
Ya que enseña la necesidad de leyes más fuertes.
So, since it illustrates the necessity for stronger laws.
Éramos un grupo de cuatro trabajadores de construcción.
We were a group of four workers in construction.
Un hombre nos reclutó aquí en Oregon para hacer el drywall en casas nuevas.
So a man recruited us here in Oregon to do the drywall on new houses.
Esta persona nos dijo que íbamos a trabajar para una compañía con licencia de construcción.
So this person told us that we were going to work for a licensed construction company.
Y entendimos que fue el supervisor para esta compañía.
And our understanding was that he was a supervisor for that company.
Yo trabajé más de 200 horas durante un mes, incluyendo muchas horas extras.
So I worked more than 200 hours during the month, including a lot of overtime.
Al final del mes, el supervisor no nos pagó, solo nos dio una parte de lo que nos debía.
So at the end of the month, the supervisor didn't pay us everything. He only gave us part of what we were owed.
Nos dijo que no pudo darnos más dinero porque el patrón no le había dado más para nosotros.
So he told us that he couldn't give us more because the employer hadn't given him any more for us.
Realmente nos quedó de ver más de $5,000 en sueldo mínimo y horas extras no pagadas.
So he ended up owing us more than $5,000 in minimum wages and overtime that was unpaid.
Cuando le dije al supervisor que íbamos a poner una demanda en contra de la compañía, él me dijo que lo debería de considerar mucho porque mi patrón, porque su patrón de él tenía abogados muy buenos y nos pudiéramos arrepentir de haberlo hecho.
So when I told the supervisor that I was going to make a complaint against the company, he said that I should think about it really hard because his boss had really good lawyers and I could end up regretting it.
De todos modos, decidimos buscar la ayuda de los abogados.
So we decided to look for the help of a lawyer anyway.
Durante el caso, mis abogados me dijeron que el contratista había dicho que él no fue el patrón, nuestro patrón.
So during the case, my lawyers told me that the contractor had said that he wasn't actually our employer.
Que le había dado el trabajo a otro contratista.
That he had given the job to another contractor.
Y que nuestro supervisor fue empleado de otra compañía.
And that our supervisor was an employee of that other company.
Todos se quisieron lavar las manos de tener responsabilidad para todos nosotros como empleados.
So everyone wanted to wash their hands of responsibility for us as employees.
Llegando a este punto, nuestro supuesto supervisor ya había desaparecido.
So by that time, our supposed supervisor had disappeared.
Hasta esta hora no hemos podido recuperar todo lo que nos deben.
So as of today, we still haven't been able to recover all that we are owed.
Este tipo de abuso afecta mucho y es un gran problema en construcción.
This kind of abuse really impacts us a lot, and it's a big problem in construction.
Espero que ustedes apoyen.
If you could wrap up, please.
Para este tipo de patrones.
So I hope that you support laws that make it more difficult for this type of employer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good morning, community members. I'm here, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and give me my speak to you.
Okay, and make sure you identify who you are.
My name is Amadeo Rodriguez Castillo, so I'm here because last year I worked for one man, and I know a friend, and I went there and I find a job because I was unemployment and tried to work for this guy. He said he want to pay me $11 an hour, so I worked for 2 weeks. The first 2 weeks they pay me well, and they pay me in cash, you know, actually. And this guy supposedly have a license and build a houses and buy land and build houses. But I work for the next five weeks and never get any cent from that. So I call my boss and say, hey, what happened there on my payment, you know? I needed money and so, because I don't work for fun. He say, I don't understand what you say. So yeah. He hung on me. And then I tell my roommate, hey, can you call for me, please? Because he say he doesn't understand. So he's American, he work here, and he call, and he say, I'm sorry, but he say he don't understand me too. How come they don't speak English? He say he don't speak English, so, no? So I work for that, and I hope, I don't know, I respect people because he's a rich guy, and I respect people who work hard for the money and get richer. But I'm poor right now and I don't get paid for the whole month. I work for 5 weeks. And right now, I don't know what to do.
Okay.
My case.
Thank you very much.
My savings, uh-huh. I spend all my money.
Okay. Is Mr. Luis here or? Okay. If not, any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much for taking your time to come tell us your stories today. Okay, the next panel is J.L. Wilson, Bob Russell, and Jan Meekums.
Madam Chair, just real quickly while they're coming up. I have heard complaints from other contractors saying they're competing against these other people, but they can't get CCB to go out there and do any investigation or bully. So, you know, maybe we need to be...
get on them a little bit.
Yeah, hammering the existing laws we have a little better and more effectively.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. I'm going to keep my comments to House Bill 3142 and 2976. We oppose both. Speaking directly to the bill on 3142, the reason we oppose it is because of the definition of employer under the bill, which captures the phrase any other person acting directly or indirectly in the interest of an employer in relation to an employee. I couldn't really begin to accurately describe what that covers. And what we think it rolls in is any HR professional, payroll manager, payroll service provider, outside consultant or counsel, or any other potentially supervisory employee into the definition of employer under this bill. So what you're effectively going to have is tens of thousands of newly minted employers in the state of Oregon, all for the purpose of being subject to wage claims. No thanks. The issue with regard to the federal FLSA, the federal law uses a much more precise definition of employer to create personal liability. An individual manager who exercises control over the nature and structure of the employment relationship or has economic control over the relationship is subject to liability as an employer under FLSA. That is a structure we would prefer. We also oppose House Bill 2976. I guess our comments there, I don't understand why we can't get to the bad actors without effectively killing the business model of an extremely viable and vital industry in this state that helps our members stay competitive. You're talking here about intrusion into private contract issues that are really beyond the pale, particularly with regard to Section 5 and the contract fees, which is basically the revenue model employed by the these agencies, and Section 9, which regards to the wage mandates. And again, it appears like the good guys are in the crossfire here, and I want to make sure they're safely removed because I really can't overstate just how important they are to our companies, and the good actors need to be protected. 2976 clearly kills their business model, and as is, won't work.
Yeah, thank you. Before we go on to testimony, the next group that's going to be coming up after these folks, Romero Sosa, Edwin Wong, and Ignacio Paramiro, and after these ladies and gentlemen have finished.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jan Meekins, the State Director of NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business in Oregon. We have 7,500 members here in Oregon that are small, Main Street-type businesses across the spectrum of job types and entrepreneurship. Also for the record, I would like to state that we absolutely, adamantly oppose wage theft. It is wrong. One person to experience wage theft is one too many. But as already been stated, I feel that this bill is, that the 2976 really hits at good businesses, and we do have, as has been stated, we do have the agencies and the methods in place for someone to seek remedy for that occasion. And on the 2012 Employment Department's site states that there were 1,638,200 workers in the state of Oregon in 2012. So we see that we're talking about a small percentage. This is not a broader, massive situation. And there are a few rogue businesses. We need to get those businesses licensed, and we need to use what's at hand for these wage issues. So we are opposed to 2976, but also I would like more to address House Bill 3142 for all of the reasons that were already mentioned by J.L. Wilson at AOI. We also feel that there's a potential that it could also undermine the independent contractor status. In my written testimony, I've made reference to specific quotes in the bill, specific provisions in the bill that we would have problems with. We see this as a Pandora's box of complications. It's very vague. It's very open to interpretation. So for that reason, we also oppose House Bill 3142. And I thank you for your time today. And any questions?
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'm here to speak only to House Bill 3142. Someone once said that consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
Emerson.
That's me.
Impressed.
Sorry. Just came out. Sorry.
Google.
We prefer consistency, particularly in the definitions surrounding employee, employment, and employer. House Bill 3142 introduces new definitions for all of those things for several chapters of law. And as Representative Holvey pointed out earlier, it does not include the five-point test that we use for employment law, Department of Revenue, and workers' compensation. I'm particularly troubled by the definition of employee, which creates a legal presumption that a person is an employee, which would force the employer to prove that they are, in fact, an independent contractor. It's not a balanced test. It seems very decidedly unbalanced to me. So we're very concerned about the unintended consequences that 3142 would produce. And that concludes my testimony, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panel?
Sorry, Madam Chair, I got one brief comment or something. I heard you say, Jan.
Yes.
That these rogue businesses, these rogue people out there taking advantage of others, we need to get them licensed. How would that work if they're wanting to disobey the law? What's going to, you know, suddenly make them say, oh, well, I need to get licensed?
Yes, Chair Doherty and Representative Thatcher, I'm not sure what that process would be, but obviously it is a problem that would needs a solution. And I don't know if part of the wage theft complaint includes reporting to the agency that needs to seek these people out and get them licensed so they are operating within the structure of our state instead of outside of the structure of our state. How easy that would be, it's a problem. But to penalize all businesses for these few bad apples is a problem of greater magnitude.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. The next panel coming up, we've got another 15 people to speak, and we still have to get through two issues on work session, so we may not get through everybody today, and we just appreciate everyone coming up, but time's not on our side today. So we had called Romero Sosa, Edwin Juan, and Ignacio Paramoro. The next group on deck is Dwayne Grange, Denise Torres, and Michael Freeman.
If we can come up quickly.
And Madam Chair, while we're waiting, I don't know if we're going to hear from the Bureau of Labor and Industries on these bills or not, because I think Representative Thatcher brings up a good point while they're coming up. You know, I would imagine that the Bureau of Labor and Industries probably doesn't have enough staff to adequately enforce the marketplace, is my presumption. Okay. And I think that's a FTE
Thank
issue.
You. Mr. Thompson.
I would think, too, that we really need to get Boldy in here as we continue this. I see a problem here, but I think this is kind of akin to cleaning up problems in the banking industry by licensing bank robbers. The really good ones, really successful bank robbers, won't sign up for a license. So they're operating outside the law now. What does a new law do?
Yes. Oh, wait, Bully is here.
Okay.
That's awesome. Okay. Thank you very much. I have these two gentlemen. We are not going to get through everybody today, so I think what we're going to do is just do as much testimony as we can. And we've heard a lot of the stories, and a lot of the stories are very good and have given us a good understanding of what the issue is. So, gentlemen.
Good morning. My name is Romeo Sosa, and I work for VOS, Worker Rights Education Project. I'm the executive director there. I work with day laborers, basically organizing day labor in the Portland area. Day laborers are Latino males, most of them, the 90%. There's like 10% of women. But also, the day laborers are pretty diverse. They're African Americans, Asian, Latinos, and American citizens. The work they do is construction, gardening, painting, and moving. Most of them, they have families in the home countries. A lot of them, they come for extreme poverty or political reason. They come to this country. The day laborers, they have a life of uncertainty because they don't know who's going to employ them. They don't know who's going to, what kind of work they're going to do. They don't know if they're going to get paid that day. Most There are about 100 to 300 day laborers waiting for work in the streets. There are like three main places in the Portland area. There's two corners, and also we have a worker center where we can connect them with the employers. Most of them, they have like a life of civil and labor rights violation. A lot of them, they get hired and they don't get paid for the day or for a week or even for a month. In the last year, we have 30 cases that day laborers didn't get paid. It's about $100,000 they own. And the year before, we have 38 cases. Most of the year, like, we have between 40 to 50 cases a year. And I'm going to tell you two...
If you could summarize, please.
Okay,
we're out of time.
Two just quickly stories. I was one of to deal with that employer. He hired 16 day laborers. And at the end of the month, they didn't get paid for the work. Some of them, they work 18 to 20, 24 hours a day. And another day laborer who I hired too, that he got, even he, his case is in the Department of Justice right now because he got punched in his face.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just want, it's in your hands, like, to solve the problem, or, you know, I just encourage you to vote yes for these three bills. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
And good morning. My name is Ignacio Paramo, and I also work for a BOS Workers' Rights Education Project. I'm the director of the Day Labor Center in Portland. We have the Labor Center. It's very similar to a hiring hall. We facilitate the process in between employers and employees to get hired. One of the services we provide in the center is we do legal clinic. To deal with wage theft. Wage theft is a big issue in these communities. We've been seeing more and more all kind of abuses happen in these communities. And we see these kind of bad employers more and more trying to find a way to rob salaries for workers. Sometimes in couple cases, we ended up winning the cases, but at the end, we didn't get any money because the employer says, "Well, do whatever you want. We don't have money anyway." So it's more and more happening. We see more and more employers having more tools to do that. So that's why we're here to really ask you to vote in favor of this, because this will be a difference in us working in these cases. If we have more strong laws to go over those bad employers, that will be easy for us to recuperate all this money for many, many guys up there that work for free in there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions? We're going to hear from two more people after this, and that's going to be it, because we do have some measures to work on.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Yeah, the day labor center. I mean, before you, what about maybe collecting something from these people that utilize these people at the day labor center? Get more information from them. Get, you know, something so that you can have a way of getting recourse.
We do. We collect information of the employers that come, but the abuses usually happen outside the center, not at the center.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony for coming here today. Okay, we're only going to hear two people that came over 100 miles, Tyler Brown and Michael Freeman. Those are the only two that indicated on the signature that they were over 100 miles. And quickly, we're going to stop at 5 till so we can do some bill work. So Michael Freeman and
Tyler Brown.
If you could start right away, please.
Good morning. Thank you. Chairman, member of the committees. Fortunately, I'm at the end because everything you need to hear, you've heard. To wit, one.
So I did.
The white hats. Identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Mike Freeman. I'm with from Coos Bay. I'm with Cardinal Services. Mm-hmm. I'm against all three bills. Representative Thompson hit it on the head, and that is,
the white hat syndrome, what you're going to do, and everybody here that's testified is wearing a white hat. They play by the rules. The people we're concerned about are those that don't play by the rules. These laws, all of these bills, are in fact are going to exacerbate the situation for the white hats, make it easier, as Broadway Cab testified on the two earlier bills, make it actually easier for the black hats, increase their advantage. Secondly, the $80,000 wage theft that one of the earlier witnesses testified about, key point, the contractor was unlicensed, all right? Anybody that chooses to operate outside of the law, of course, you don't have the enforcement mechanisms. Third, Burley testifies that the wage claims are no worse in the staffing industry. That's important. What we have here are a need for minor repairs. Michael Dale testified that there's a need for structural changes, that simply better enforcement wasn't going to work. He offered you four reasons. The first was that because there's an increasing use of contingent labor. Intuitively, that is not necessarily negative. That's a neutral statement, all right? Other than he said that you have a temporary agency, you could go to work there, or to the guy standing next to the side of the road. Probably not comparable to the white hats that you have here in the room. Secondly, he said that the judgments have not been collectible. One, that's non-unique to the staffing agents, to the staffing industry. Secondly, and flip that around, actually wages get paid when the client employer goes out of business, the staffing agency is still on the hook for the wages. Third thing that he said was that people don't have information. Totally agree. We need to tell employees and applicants about wage theft, get the information in their hands. And fourth, he said that he's been compromising with the staffing industry. That's not the issue. What all these bills, and I've got some good written testimony that I'd like to give to you, it makes Burley's job much more difficult. What really needs to happen here is a collaborative effort, getting all the stakeholders together. Let's get the Northwest Justice Project, let's get our firm, let's get interested, the white hats together, let's get employment, revenue, Burley, OSHA, Department of Consumer Business Services, let's get all the stakeholders to the table, get all the issues at the table at once, and figure out what minor repairs we can do to fix the issues rather than pile a bunch of poorly written laws on top of it.
Thank you very much. Why don't you stay there in case we have questions. You are?
Tyler Brown.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. I work for K-Force, and our services are in the technology industry. We're a staffing firm. We serve sort of the highly compensated end of the spectrum, and we just want to represent that we see ourselves as collateral damage and a clear issue. Obviously, wage theft is reprehensible, and we oppose that. But we see our industry in the top end of the pay spectrum as being negatively affected by 2976, and we oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for the panelists? Thank you very much. A couple of comments before we're going to close the public hearing in a couple of minutes is that it looks like there is some commonality between the groups, and that's the idea that wage theft is not something that either of the parties finds acceptable. And I think what I'm going to suggest is that at least in the interim we go through and we get together and try to work on some of these issues, because I think that there have been a lot of very, very good ideas brought up. I know that Burley would be glad to be working with all of you. I think Representative Thatcher brought up some very good suggestions dealing with education and of the workers. So I appreciate everybody showing up today. It is definitely a very emotional issue. I think a lot of you have seen it firsthand, and it seems like you also have a profession that wants to help, and so we appreciate that. So with those words, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2976, 2977, and 3142. And I open a work session on, thank you very much. I open a work session on a couple, we're going to carry over 2418.
We've got the fiscal. It's being printed.
No, we don't have a fiscal, quite have a fiscal yet on that one, so we'll do that on Friday. Open up a work session on House Bill 2113. Jan, if you could just summarize it.
Committee members, this is the bill that increases the maximum fee that BOLI can establish for a farm labor contract license in their endorsements. There's no revenue impact.
Quietly, please.
Madam Chair, can you get ask them to be quiet, please? I can't hear.
The audience, please quiet down. Leave quietly. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
There is no revenue impact. A fiscal statement just came to the committee while we were in a hearing. There is a fiscal impact. Shouldn't be a surprise since it was a fee issue. We don't have the statements before you unless you're on OLIS. If anyone needs to see that, we can arrange that. There is a referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay.
Okay. That's the wrong one. Okay.
Do you want to send it to Ways and Means?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, Ways and Means. 2113. Is everybody happy with they're okay with not seeing the fiscal?
Do you guys want to see the fiscal? Are you guys on OLIS? Are you looking at that? Or
and this is going to Ways and Means?
Yes.
I think they're probably pretty ample to handle the fiscal.
Ready for a motion.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2113 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 2113 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Weidner.
Excused.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kennemer.
Excused.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay. The motion passes. And we don't need a carrier on this one?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. House Bill 2900, did I close the work session?
Close the work session.
Have I done that?
No.
I close the work session on House Bill 2113. The carrier or the Representative Krieger suggested for House Bill 2900 that he would like to have a interim work group on this as opposed to a task force. And so we've talked to him. We're looking at some folks for a task force. If anyone's interested on this, because we think it's a great idea, please let me know and we will have you on the work group. But that's what he suggested, so we're not going to be moving it forward. So I open a work session on House Bill 2845. Jan?
Madam Chair, committee members, this is a bill that allows self-service storage facilities to sell insurance if they have a limited license from DCBS. There is no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued, and there is no subsequent referral, and there's no amendment before you.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2845 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Chair Barton moves House Bill 2845 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Weidner.
Excused.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kennemer.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay. A carrier. What?
Isn't it Garrett's bill?
Pardon?
Is it Garrett's bill?
Why don't we have the consent calendar carried?
This is the committee bill.
It came through the committee.
Okay. Came through the committee. Would somebody like a carrier? Representative Thatcher?
Sure.
Okay. Representative Thatcher will carry the bill. I close the work session on House Bill 2845. Okay, see no other business. Thank you very much for the your attention today. Good information, good testimony.
Do you want to carry it? Should we try Friday? Just carry over to Friday.
We're going to carry over House Bill 2418 over to Friday. And by that time, we should have our fiscal. Hopefully, it's coming in. Okay, that's it. Thank you guys very much for your patience.